This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The book, Bless Me Ultima, was published in 1972 and has since become an American classic. It's taught in many classrooms around the world, but unfortunately, in some schools, it's been banned. The story is powerful, thought-provoking. It's not limited to Mexican-American literature, but it is a foundational novel for the category. And now it's being presented as a play here in San Antonio. It's recently been staged as an opera in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we're going to be talking about the novel, its adaptations. There's also a Bless Me Ultima movie. So what does that mean to you? What does Bless Me Ultima say to you? Call in. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Jose Ruben De Leon. He's the director of the classic theater production of Bless Me Ultima, and you may know him from many of his acting performances here in San Antonio. He's a very well-known, established local actor. Tony Zancanella, he is the executive director of the Opera Southwest in New Mexico. Emma Hernandez is here. She's the coordinator for the Latino Collection of the San Antonio Public Library. It's great to have you here. I'm going to start off here. This is a clip from the play of Bless Me Ultima here in San Antonio.
Not be afraid to dream.
Even in my dreams, I have to decide. The invite is for Papa or Luna for Mama.
You can be both. Take everything that is beauty and strong in your heart, and you will grow stronger.
And we're hearing the exchange between Tony, who is the young protagonist, and his protector and mentor, Ultima, talking about one of the driving themes of the book, which is choice. And here's another clip, and this is from the opera. Those are Tony's parents arguing about his son's future. That's another theme. So many themes in this story about struggle, about destiny, about expectations. We invite you into the conversation. Number is 210-614-8980. So let me go to Jose Ruben about the play. When did you decide? You did House on Mongo Street
right
recently, before this one. And then how did you decide, now we're going to take on Bless Me Ultima?
Well, it was in 2010 that I contacted Rodolfo Anaya, asking permission to adapt the novel to the stage, and he told me then that he was working on a draft, and so, and then we ended up talking about the death of his wife. She had just died a month before, and then I shared with him how I related so much to the story, growing up in Laredo, Texas, Laredo, a border town. And so there were so many themes in this book that resonated with me. And then after Mongo Street, I was giving Sandra a drive to her, taking her to the hotel. And I said to her, I've been trying to get a hold of this script, and I would love to produce it next. And she said, contact my agent, Susan. I think she's handling that script. So I did contact her, and she had her assistant send me a hard copy in the mail, and I presented it to Kelly at the Classic Theater, and they decided to produce it, and so.
So it's now in production. People can see it.
Yes.
It's at the old Woodlawn Theater on Fredericksburg Road, and what's it been like?
It's been very exciting for us as a company to hear the responses of the people and how so many of the scenes resonate with them. Just the other night, I was sitting in the lobby with a couple, and the woman said, I have never been to the theater, and I had never been to a theater that was this intimate. And she said, the moment I sat down, I knew I was going to cry. She goes, I didn't know the story. I just knew that something was going to happen to me and was going to be very emotional, I guess because it was so close and we were all so...
It was a theater in the round.
Theater in the round, yeah. I decided to stage it in the round. So, yes, it is a very intimate setting. And she said, and as soon as the play started and I hear the narrator say Hiroshima, and I turn to my right and two gentlemen are crying. And one of them put his hand to his lips, you know, because his lips were quivering. And she said, and from then on, they just continued to cry. And she said, I was brought into the story, and I too started crying, and people around me are crying. And she said, so it was a very moving experience. So she was sitting down and she couldn't move. So her husband gave her permission just to settle. And
For people who aren't aware with the story, so what does Hiroshima or the atomic bomb have to do with, you know, the story of Blessed Ultima, which is set in New Mexico? This also covers the horrors of war and what this does to people, and how this changes them. So much stuff. And so let me go to Tony over at the Opera Southwest in New Mexico. When did you tell me about this story to launch this opera?
So this was an interesting project for us, because for many years we have been producing traditional grand opera at various theaters in Albuquerque. Aida, La Boheme, the sort of standard classics. And about 5 years ago, we moved to the National Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque, which has a really beautiful sort of modern 600-seat theater, which in the opera world is kind of intimate. And it's been a really good home to us. And we've wanted to, be more than just a tenant at that theater, but, you know, do something that aligns, you know, our mission to produce opera with their mission around Hispanic culture. And in 2013, almost out of the blue, I got an email from Hector Armienta, the composer of this opera, saying, you know, I've acquired the rights to turn this novel into an opera, and which is sort of not the ordinary way of things in the opera world. Usually, you obtain the intellectual property, and then you go look for a composer who would move that project forward. This was really a composer-driven project. And at the time, we weren't, financially capable of doing that, but we've had some reasonable success over the last couple of years. And finally, in 2015, I was able to say, let's move ahead with this project and actually get it out there. So that it's been about 5 years in the making as far as getting the project. We actually just closed last weekend, and what has been amazing is the response of the Albuquerque community. This book is sort of a national treasure, but for New Mexicans, this is the most famous, most important work by a New Mexican author, and it really draws so deeply on the kind of specific culture of New Mexico.
Right. And so Tony, I've got to take a break right here, but I'm going to come back with you. We're going to talk more about the creation of the opera of Bless Me Ultima. Our phone lines are open. We definitely want to hear when this is going to come to San Antonio. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source. Stay tuned.
Curanderas were healers who helped the people. Some, like El Hombre Volador, was a great healer. Imagine Ultima as a lovely young woman growing up in the windswept llano of Las Pasturas. She chose not to marry, but to learn from El Hombre Volador. She became his apprentice. From him, she learned the secrets of the soul. She learned to fly. She knew more than prayers and herbs. She knew how to enter into the world of the soul. That was her greatest gift. That she could bring back a soul from its suffering.
And that is the narrator who tells the story of the grown Tony in the Bless Me Ultima play that's performed here in San Antonio at the Classic Theater. We're talking about the story, the novel, the movie, the play that's here, the opera in New Mexico that just wrapped up. And Tony Zancanella is the executive director of the Opera Southwest in New Mexico. So tell me about how right now the play has five voices, or how did the opera, what are you doing with that?
Well, so, you know, whenever you adapt a work to the stage, and I'm sure your other guests can talk to this as well as I can, there are decisions to be made about what can come along and what can be left behind. The novel like Bless Me Ultima has a lot of different layers, subplots, and themes. And in particular in the world of opera, because of the pacing of opera, which is sort of dictated by the music, you have to be even more aggressive is maybe the wrong word, but selective is probably a better word in what makes it from the novel onto the stage. So in this particular case, some themes have to get left behind. One of the themes that I really like a lot in Bless Me Ultima that does not, in fact, make it into the opera is kind of the idea of tradition and modernity. You know, the novel is set at a unique time in New Mexico, immediately, you know, sort of post-war, where there's a lot of modernization happening in rural New Mexico. There's a whole subplot about his brothers, and that's all left behind in the opera. The opera really becomes focused on the story of Tony and Ultima. Ultima becomes kind of a larger character in the opera, just sort of by default. But the overarching theme, and I think your other guests touched on it, is one of destiny. I know that Mr. Armienta and Mr. Anaya had the chance to talk about what sort of themes from the novel would actually make it into the opera. And the three that Mr. Anaya asked we really focus on and make it into the opera is this idea of destiny, both in terms of the sort of surface level question for our protagonist, Antonio, am I going to be drawn to the llano and the pastoralism of my father's family, or the farming priesthood and agriculturalism of my mother's family? And in fact, the little clip that you played there earlier is his parents, Gabriel and Maria, having a disagreement about those sort of value systems. So that's one kind of question of destiny that is in the novel, and we hope that the opera really captured. The other question of destiny has to do with the supernatural world, in the cosmology of the book and the opera. There are real hazards for people who tinker with destiny, and Ultima, of course, as a curandero with some, access to the powers of the supernatural, does alter others' destinies from time to time, and that, of course, has kind of dire consequences.
And how are you in the evolution of this opera? Is it continuing to be developed?
So we literally had we had the world premiere last week. The popular response was pretty incredible. Certainly nothing I've ever seen in my career. We had to add a performance, and we still ended up with about a 500 household waiting list. So we're certainly going to be coming back to this opera in the next couple of years. The other thing that I would hope would happen for this opera is for other opera companies to mount new productions of it. Certainly, I think it has an appeal in the American Southwest that is undeniable. But, like all great works of art and literature, has sort of universal themes that I think would make it, good to be performed almost anywhere. It is having a second production at Opera Cultura in San Jose, California. That is the composer's sort of home opera company. So, and that'll be at the end of April.
Well, I don't know how many people could find someone to play the role of Tony. I mean, tell me about that casting. You had to find a young man, a child, who could sing that part.
Yeah, so that's that was a really tricky problem for an opera. I think the traditional solution in classical opera, like if I think of Marriage of Figaro, the role of Cherubino, is to cast an adult woman who sings in sort of the alto register, and you do it en veste. The composer and Mr. Anaya, partly because, you know, this is an autobiographical work, we're not terribly enthusiastic about that particular casting solution. Because if you have heard an adult woman opera singer, it really does not very closely approximate a boy's tone. They're very keen on having an actual child sing the role. And I must have heard several hundred auditions of little boys. But at the end of the day, you know, an 8 to 10 year old little boy lacks the, or at least most 8 to 10 year old little boys that I could find, lack the vocal power, musical, you know, long-term musical training, and just general attention. When we're doing an opera, it's, you know, 6 hour days, 6 days a week. So we came to what turned out to be a really beautiful compromise in a 15-year-old girl, Daisy Beltran, who sort of came to me almost by accident. I was having drinks with a colleague of mine and sort of sharing my frustrations trying to figure out how to get this opera actually cast. And she said, you know, have you considered, you know, a teenage girl? The vocal quality approximates that of a little boy's. And for those of you who know 8-year-old boys and 15-year-old girls, they are light years apart in terms of their maturity and focus. And then, of course, you know, finally, the last risk with a small boy is that the voice will break, you know, at any point in the production, which is a gigantic risk.
Right. So I have been wondering about that. So that's how you crack that. So let me go. Let me ask you more question about this. What was it that you think is driving people to see this opera? I mean, there's a hunger for this. I hear it all the time.
I wish I could. I know. Part of it is sort of what people in New Mexico will say, because when the stage play was done here, there was sort of a similar response. Our props master, Claudia Mathis, worked on the stage play, which actually toured in New Mexico several years ago. And she said, you know, people talk about it as sort of the magic of Blessed Mute Ultima, this particular work in New Mexico. It is just very difficult for me to get across to people not from New Mexico the degree to which it's important. So she was saying, you know, on a tour, they went to Santa Rosa, which is not a very big town, and did a production in a high school auditorium, high school gym, for 1,000 people came out, and they asked them to stay another night, and I guess they did a second performance. I mean, it just, I think, for New Mexicans, they see, we see ourselves and our and the culture reflected in this novel in a way that, you know, other works of art just don't. And this was sort of the first one that really captured that.
Well, let me turn this to Jose Ruben de Leon, the director of the play here in San Antonio. And I mean, I see that there's a desire. People really want to see this play. Why?
I think one of the reasons is that so many people have read the novel and they're curious about how this novel is going to translate to the stage. When I received the script, I thought, I'm really curious to see how he has created this adaptation and what he included and didn't include. And I think there is just this...
You think it's an intellectual curiosity or an emotional curiosity?
I think it's a combination of both, yes. And for me,
I want to see how I'm going to feel when I see this play.
Right. And I think that's also how the cast approached it, is we have this iconic story, and so how are we going to tell it? And at rehearsals, I kept saying to them, okay, it's bordering on telenovela. You can't be that big, and you have to be, you know, more subdued. And so we played with all of that throughout the rehearsal process. And then working in an arena setting, many of the actors had never worked in that setting. And how do you adapt? How do you, you know, tweak your body or your face? And it's I kept saying, this is not cinema. This is like, you know, performing in an iPad, you know, frame. So it's really intimate, and we got to keep it very simple and very honest in order for the novel, for this work to work and to affect people. And so
a lot of people talk about the cultural references, the touchstone, right. The curandera,
yes.
Part of the story, right. The grandmother caring and healer part of the story.
Right.
And maybe many of us are removed from that, but still yet we're touched by that, and we feel something from that.
Right. There are many cast members that have had an abuela or a tía who has been a healer in the family. And
you too.
I grew up with a curandera mother, and it was a an interesting, you know, life. People would come to the door in the middle of the night or in the middle of the day, and they wanted to see my mother. And so my mother would stop whatever she was doing to tend to those people's needs. And I grew up very, very, in a very young age, understanding about, you know, this compassion, you know, that sometimes is lacking in our lives. And my mother modeled that for us.
And so it's like Ultima has superpowers. You know, she's like a superhero. She has superpowers, and her superpowers comes from her compassion.
Yes. And I certainly saw that in my mother. And, you know, when you are, it's not, I think curanderas are born. They're not, they don't choose this healing art to reach out to people. I know my mother didn't. There were times when my father said, "You're crazy. What are you doing?" You know. There was a time when my mother was even involved in exorcisms. And, you know, now that I look back and think back, I thought that was pretty crazy. My father would go with her to homes. In this particular case, he went to a home, and he said he was sitting in the living room. My mother was doing the exorcism in
doing
another
room. Doing the
Olympia? Doing something. And he saw all these frames, all these pictures on the wall in the living room spinning on the walls, and he ran out, and he never went into any home again that my mother was
for real.
Yes. And so he came home, he was shocked.
So how important was it for you to get that right? I mean, correct, have an authentic presentation of, because we see Olympia in the play,
right? It was very, very important. I know that Ultima Maria Marisa Varela was contacting and had conversations with curanderos here in San Antonio, but she wanted somebody from New Mexico to help her with that ritual of reversing a curse. And by chance, she got a hold of somebody that is living in Corpus who was from New Mexico, and she gave her a list, sort of like a litany of that ritual, and Marisa adapted it so that it wouldn't be so long and so exhaustive, but
wow.
It's in there.
We're getting some emails from people. We got from Michael, says, "Don't miss the classic production, the classic theater's production. Saw the play last week, and the production and cast were amazing." Another email, "Bless Me, Ultima is my favorite book. I read it in the 70s. I met Mr. Anaya in Albuquerque many years ago." A lot of people emailing in, but you can call in. Tell us what you remember about the book, or you saw the play or the movie. What drives you? Why do you think this is important? And why you should go see the play? The number is 210-614-8980. We're going to dig more into the book and what it means for Chicana literature when we come back from the break. Stay tuned.
California reduced its maternal mortality rate by more than half.
From 14.0 to 6.2, a fraction of Texas, in 4 years.
Maternal mortality rates in Texas are amongst the highest in the country. What lessons can Texas learn from California? This story, plus an attorney walks us through the often confusing legal language relating to immigration. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
We're very lucky today. Mira. Gordolobo. good for throat and lung fever infections. No. Speak to it. It is alive. Like all things, like the trees, the rocks, the river, you must speak to it before you take it from its home. Oh, you who dwell here by the river.
You that dwell here by the river.
We lift you to make good medicine.
We lift you to make good medicine.
There is a beauty in the time of day and the time of night. And there is peace in the river and in the hills. Ultima taught me to listen to the mystery of the living earth and to feel complete in the fulfillment of its time.
That is a clip from the movie Bless Me Ultima. One of the other themes in the story, the novel, is about nature and our connectivity to it and what happens when we are removed from it. We're talking about the book, the movie, the play, the opera, Bless Me Ultima, what does it mean to you? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We want to hear from you, like Michelle. And Michelle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So I taught at a local Catholic high school about 15 years ago, and I taught freshmen, and I just thought the book was so important as representative of the culture of the majority of the school and its themes and the fact that it did touch on Catholicism and the complications involved with that. It was on the Archdiocesan approved reading list, and I had a parent complain to, and only my honors courses were reading it, I had a parent complain to the principal about it, and I almost got fired for teaching it. We were already almost through with the book, and I was told to immediately stop, even though I had my sources of why, justification of why we were teaching it. The librarians helped me to gather information, but I just felt like such a lost opportunity, and I'm still in touch with a lot of those students, and a lot of them were like, I finished it because it was so good.
A controversy of the book, and especially it does confront Catholicism head on and raises some issues. Thank you for the call, Michelle. Let me go to Emma Hernandez. She's the coordinator for the Latino Collection for the San Antonio Public Library. Can you talk about the book in the context and maybe some of the issues that we heard from Michelle?
Well, this story is set in 1940s New Mexico, and it's revolving around a 7-year-old boy and a coming-of-age story. And his general, the conflict is brought in many ways by the presence of Ultima coming into their lives, because as the caller mentioned, he does have to experience the indigenous teachings and see how they push up against a lot of the Catholic teachings that he's been raised with for so long. And this is often why folks have maybe some trouble with the story, is because this young boy is having to call into question many, many things that he's learned, seeing alternate ways of viewing the world, and having to rifle with those choices, seeing this ancestral knowledge that's always been present in his life, but also having to understand that his mother's greatest wish for him is to become a priest. So he has to make these internal decisions at a very young age to say, where am I going to place the most value? Which choices am I going to make? And which of those teachings am I going to use in my day-to-day life?
Is it an anti-Catholic book?
I don't believe that it is. I think that it does focus on, it does bring to our attention the fact that the Catholic Church did try to, in many ways, demonize these kinds of teachings in the process of colonization of indigenous peoples. So that is sometimes a topic or a theme that's hard for people to discuss. The fact that, you know, the church did have to go through this process of colonizing folks and bringing them into the church by way of saying that these curanderas are evil or that they're touching them with ungodly things. But I don't believe that it's an anti-Catholic book. I think it really demonstrates, I think it's that one of the reasons why it has connected with so many readers is the fact that they see these conflicts in their everyday life now. They are Catholic, you know, churchgoers that at the same time have to say, my grandmother was a curandera and I still believe in those teachings and I still find comfort in those things.
Right. So these are some of the questions that have been raised by people like Octavio Paz, talking about what it is to be of Mexico, Mexican, and of two worlds, indigenous, and also of being colonized and dealing with the love for the Virgin and all these other issues. And so it's deep and rich.
It's deep and rich. And that's one of the main topics, is the fact that you can have several cultural traditions and it just creates, you know, further creates your identity, and you can live within these gray areas and these multiple realms.
There's another caller. And Kelly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Kelly Rosa Cabunac. I'm actually in the cast. I'm on Indie Ensemble for Blessing Ultima. And earlier you asked a question about why is it so important? Why do so many people want to see it? And I think one of the main reasons that I know a lot of my friends and family and community members have seen it is representation. It's an all Latina, Latino, Latinx cast with a Latino director, Jose Ruben. And so that's something that's not seen often, that representation of being able to go to the theater in a city that's 70% Latino or Hispanic, and being able to see Chicana actors and Chicano actors and Mexican Americans and, you know, different Latino identities on stage, it's rare.
Thank you, Kelly, for the call. So, Jose Ruben, you produced House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros. You've had challenges coming up here and becoming an actor.
Sure.
And dealing with assumptions. And you figured out a way to deal with that. Talk about that.
I did. I am from Laredo, and so I was involved in the theater. I got involved in the theater when I was 17. I actually went to an audition. I had no idea what an audition was for a musical. I accompanied a friend. I'm just sitting there watching the process, and the director turns to me and he says, "Are you going to audition?" And I said, "Okay." So I went to the pianist, she plucked out some notes, I matched them, I got on stage, I read, and I used to read with a very heavy Spanish accent. So I didn't get cast, my friend did, but I kept going to all the rehearsals. I was just fascinated by the ritual of rehearsals. So a week before the opening, a cast member had bought a motorcycle and he hurt himself. So the director turned to me and goes, "Get up there." And I never got off. And he was from Fort Worth, and he tried to work. He was from Casa Mañana Theater in Fort Worth. And he tried to work with my accent and I couldn't get it. I had two lines. One of them said, "This way, please." And I would say, "This way, please." And the other one was, "Well, another bachelor." And he would say, "Jose, it's well, another bachelor." And I would say, "Well, another bachelor." So I couldn't distinguish the sounds in my head between the CHs and the SHs. And, you know, I used to call, you know, I used to name a chair, Cher, like Cher Bono. But not until I started taking voice lessons and singing in Italian and German and French and English and Spanish did I begin to get this idea and concept of sound. So I was able to work through that, and then, you know, eventually just got rid of my Spanish accent. Until I come to San Antonio to study theater, and I'm auditioning for a play, and I was working as a bilingual phone representative, and I am reading this Tartuffe text. I can see it in English, but my mind wouldn't switch from Spanish to the English. So I'm reading it in, I'm seeing it in English, but my Spanish accent just took over. And I sounded like somebody who was just learning to speak the language. And I was at an audition.
Let's talk about how unfair people can be when they hear that, you know?
I love accents and I don't care, you know, I'm just fascinated by that. It was unfair, but for me, It spun me in a very different direction. I was humiliated, you know, standing there in front of all my fellow students, and I closed my binder and I walked off the audition and I went to a bookstore and I bought a book on Garcia Lorca and I promised myself that I would write a one-man show and that I wouldn't audition anymore because I didn't want to be humiliated. But at that very moment, I was angry at myself for knowing Spanish and English, and I thought maybe I shouldn't speak Spanish anymore, so this won't happen to me again. But then I just started creating work for myself. I did a one-man show on the Gospel of Mark. I memorized all 16 chapters. That's how I started performing solo. Then I do a one-man show on St. Francis, then I do a one-man show on Juan Diego, and then I create my Lorca show, a one-man show on Federico Garcia Lorca. And I've been creating work for myself since 1992, and that is what happened to me from that experience. I looked into my talents and my gifts, and I thought, I can create work. I don't have to audition. And that's what I've been doing since 1992, creating work for myself.
Creating your own opportunities, yes. Doing your own inventiveness and learning in the process. And now you're sharing that with others?
Yes. I am absolutely encouraging, you know, these Latino actors to look for opportunities for themselves, because we don't have a, you know, professional theater company for Latinos.
So, but you're changing that.
But I am changing that, and so I'm just creating this group of Latino actors that do not want to play stereotypes, that do not want to do plays that are demeaning to us as a culture and as a people, to look for material that is new and that resonates with others, not just Latinos, but that have these universal themes. So let's create the work if we don't have it.
And support that work here locally. We're going to continue talking about Bless Me Ultima, the play, the book, the opera, the movie. We welcome your phone calls. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break.
What happens when we die?
When we die, our body goes back to the earth. But the soul keeps on growing. There is no end for the soul.
No end. Where does it go?
The soul goes to the ancestors.
The ancestors in heaven?
Quizás sí.
I think of Ubito and Florence.
You saw them die. Susto shocks the soul. But when you're grown, you will see that even those tragedies make you strong. That's the purpose of life, to make the soul strong, the body too.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. That is a segment, a clip from the play, Rodolfo Anaya's Bless Me Ultima. It's being performed here in San Antonio at the Classic Theater, which is right next door to the Woodlawn Theater on Fredericksburg Road. And how long will y'all be doing this performance, Jose Rubin?
It is running till March 11th.
Okay, so back to the book. And it's really fascinating to me that when Rodolfo Anaya wrote the book, there really wasn't a whole lot of other Latino literature, Mexican-American literature in out there. Where was the world in regards to that, Emma Hernandez?
Well, this book was published in 1972. So at the time of its publication, the Chicano literary movement, very much so in its infancy, was still finding itself and still finding that category, what it actually contains. Now it can be defined a bit more as carrying those themes of identity, discrimination, biculturalism. And that's also why this book has also carried, you know, so many had so much support from the community, because it was the introduction of many themes that we so often see as Chicanos, as Mexican Americans, having multiple identities pushing against each other and trying to negotiate those things. Having the Spanish versus indigenous culture, having those conflicts that we see Antonio have with the English and Spanish speakers at school. And so many of us can connect to those different experiences. So seeing that all the way, you know, in modern times now, this book is set in the 1940s, published in the 1970s. And here we are in 2018 with an opera and a play, because there are themes that have carried on. Unfortunately, we do still have these conflicts, but now we have so many more mirrors to reflect our own experiences. And this was the beginning of all of that. The author is often seen as the father of Chicano literature for that very reason, because it was one of the first texts that really showcased what it was to be Chicano in the United States.
And Tony Zancanella, the executive director of the Opera Southwest in New Mexico, is there a lot of excitement that maybe you have figured out how to bring new people to the opera, or being able to use the culture of you know, the Mexican American culture in New Mexico, and saying, come listen to this opera, and maybe people will discover the opera. Is this a way to bring new blood to the opera?
I think that's absolutely accurate. And actually, one of the previous callers talked about the question of representation, and that is something that you know, I have come to a pretty firm understanding is absolutely important. We were very pleased that the entire cast and all the creative leadership of Bless Mi Ultima were Hispanic or Latino. So that was, and I think that matters on some level as well. For us, one of the nice things about the success of Bless Mi Ultima, we actually have sort of a longer plan here at Opera Southwest. I don't want to kind of derail that conversation about Bless Mi Ultima, but our longer-term plan is actually to do quite a bit more work that draws on the Hispanic and Latino experience going forward here in partnership with the center. You know, that I think your caller said it, the population of San Antonio was 70% Hispanic or Latino.
Yep.
In Albuquerque, it's 47%. And frankly, a lot of the traditional old line art organizations, including the opera, did not do anything to address that. And I think a lot of people in the past maybe threw up their hands and said, well, there's no way to address that. There's just a cultural divide. It's a gap. You know, who knows? But I think that is in a way what Bless Mi Ultima does represent, kind of as a watershed moment. It is important representation, and so the other question that the thing that came up was this question of language, and that was actually probably the most common question I answered in the lead up to producing this opera, is what language is this going to be in? We're all, you know, used to opera being in you know, Italian and German and in French and so forth. It's a kind of a foreign art form in a lot of ways, and so people had that question, and I would just turn back and say, what language is the book in? And of course, the book was written in beautiful English prose with these wonderful, you know, Spanish interjections, and that's how the opera is. You know, it's in English with Spanish interjections, and our composer, you know, for him that was important. His you know, he grew up speaking English, second generation in this country. And, you know, for him, his Spanish is not his first language. And there was a question for him of identity around, you know, I'm Latino too, even though Spanish is not my first language. I'm, you know, comfortable around Spanish. I speak it sometimes a little bit, but it's not my first language. So, right. So the book, you know, kind of, I think, speaks to that in its
yeah, language. And I don't think that a limited Spanish or no Spanish is a barrier to appreciating the book or the play or any of its presentations. Let's go to Carlos. He's called in. And Carlos, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Just wanted to let you guys know you got a wonderful show. Bless Mi Ultima is a Chicano literature classic that brings back so many memories. And what a theme, you know, reminding us of our indigenous, our European selves, and what we're experiencing today. Thank you. So I've seen several productions by Rubén de León, and he's just the utmost quality. He's the type of artist that we all need to rally behind. He's brought wonderful top-of-the-line entertainment.
All right, Carlos, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Emma Hernandez, coordinator for the Latino Collection at the San Antonio Public Library. You guys are still kind of brand new at the library, and do people come looking for Bless Mi Ultima, or how is the collection going?
The collection is going great. We're about 6 months in. I'm happy to report that we had about a 242% increase in use of our titles simply by moving down to the first floor. So honestly, it's been a great experience, and the community has really rallied behind us. Our programs are often standing room only, and it really is demonstrative of a need to create programs and art, books, literature, plays, operas that showcase this community, because we really are wanting to support artists that reflect our own experiences. So we're more than happy to have this service available to the Latino community here in San Antonio, because we are 70% Latin American with roots in Mexico. So this story really does connect with us a lot, and our readers love it.
So Jose Rubin de Leon, when people come to the play, do you think that they know the story, or do they are they coming in without the background knowledge?
I am going to say that a lot of people that have come have read the novel, and I've had conversations with them. A lot of Anglos are fascinated with the book and have been for years, because some of them taught it at school. And so I've had really good conversations about how the book moved them and helped them understand the Latino community, especially those students in their classrooms. And all these questions about curanderismo and the Catholicism and the healing arts.
And there's also these archetypes in the book and the play in that are very much present in Latino culture, and maybe if you're not familiar with the culture, you know, you don't understand, but sure, it's there, and you understand certain things about respect and the consideration of your elders and of your elders that have not gone, have sure, passed.
Right.
So that's important.
I also have a sense that a lot of people are coming to support Latino artists, because right now Latinos in America are not, you know, viewed so
well. There's something there.
So, you know, let's go support Latino actors on stage, and let's go support a work by a Latino, Chicano playwright. I mean, it's a wonderful time for us to be producing the work, and I'm very grateful to Classic Theater for doing this.
And Tony, at Southwest New Mexico, if people want to see this, they have to what? They have to wait, or they have to get a ticket to what do you say, San Jose?
Yeah, so San Jose in California is doing a production in April. I don't want to force anybody's hand over in Texas, but we had several Texas companies come visit to watch this production. The response from my colleagues in the field has been really fabulous, and I think Texas will probably see a production, I can't say where just yet, but within the next 1 or 2 years probably.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us. This is Tony Canzanella, the executive director of the Opera Southwest, and Jose Rubin de Leon, director of the Classic Theater production of Bless Mi Ultima. And so there are still seats available at coming shows?
Yes, there are some seats available for Friday, some for Saturday. There's one show that's sold out. I think that's this coming Sunday, because Classic is also having an event that evening to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the theater's existence. So the cast members will be part of that.
You can check them out online. Yes. Emma Hernandez, coordinator of the San Antonio, the Latino Collection for the San Antonio Public Library. Thanks for joining us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.